Welcome to the Pursuit of Relevance podcast. I'm your host, Darren DeMonte. This podcast is for entrepreneurs looking to launch and grow an e-commerce business by making it relevant to search engines and, more importantly, people. Welcome to episode 10. I'm back with Sam Mallikarjun, and today I want to talk to you about the pros and cons of selling on your own website versus Amazon, etc. So I guess let's just jump in. So why should entrepreneurs focus on selling on their own website versus, say, Etsy, Amazon, or eBay?
Sure. So there's two forces at play here, and you're going to have to forgive me because I'm going to commit the ultimate sin of using meaningless business jargon, but I promise I'll explain. One thing to consider is what we call platform strategy, and then the other thing to consider is customer-centric economics. So when I say platform strategy, usually in software that refers to the ability of a software company to, you know, let other people build apps on their platform, which then they can say, wow, lots of people are using this app. We're going to incorporate it into the core functionality of our piece of software. Amazon has this same approach. All these marketplaces have this same approach. They let sellers sell on their market to help them explore, test, and optimize consumer markets that aren't profitable enough for them to fulfill directly. When they become profitable enough to fulfill directly, Amazon goes into it and they become a direct fulfiller in those markets. So by selling on Amazon, you are getting some revenue, but really what you're doing is paying Amazon for the privilege of helping them figure out what are good profitable cohorts for them to focus on. The second thing that I said was customer-centric economics. And what that means is this idea that your goal as an e-commerce company is not to complete a transaction. It's to acquire and retain a customer. Starbucks is a great example of this from a transactional perspective, right? So the average Starbucks sale is worth like $5.90. And if Starbucks looked at their business the same way most e-commerce businesses look at their business, Starbucks would say, okay, like I'm going to spend maybe like $1.50, maybe $2 to sell this $6 cup of coffee. But in reality, a Starbucks customer is worth over $15,000 over the course of their lifetime.
That's ridiculous.
I know. So the Starbucks marketers aren't saying, I'm going to spend $2 to sell a $6 cup of coffee. They're saying, I'm going to spend $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 to acquire and retain a $14,000 or $15,000 customer. When you sell through Amazon or eBay, you don't own that customer. Amazon and eBay owns that customer. I was watching a movie the other day, and some woman, she got a bag, and her son said, where'd you get the bag? And she said, I got it on Amazon. Odds are she probably didn't get it from Amazon. She probably got it from like Bob's Bag Emporium or something like that. But the relationship she has is with Amazon. So you're losing control of the customer, and you're essentially subsidizing Amazon's, you know, world domination.
So I guess the biggest advantage of selling on your own site would be you own the customer relationship because the goal is to acquire and retain customers. And if you're doing that on Amazon, then you're just helping them retain and acquire customers.
Exactly, right? So you have no ability to upsell, cross-sell, resell. If somebody buys from you on Amazon, Amazon can and likely will send them a follow-up email the next day or the next week trying to sell them one of your competitors' products. You don't control that relationship at all.
So are there any pros to selling on marketplaces, you know, versus selling on your own website?
Yeah, it's revenue, and revenue is nice, and it's incredibly addictive, right? Like it's the time to value for you as a business is really, really fast, right? So if you're going to, instead of selling on Amazon, you want to like launch a blog and, you know, do some search engine optimization and do some PPC and drive traffic to your site and convert your own customers, that might take, you know, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, or a year before you really start to see this uptick in revenue. You can go on Amazon right now and start making money if you've just got stuff in your inventory. But you're going to have to depress your prices in order to actually be competitive on Amazon. And then there are things in the Amazon terms of service and, you know, other marketplace terms of service where you can't actually have a different price on your website than Amazon. So you end up having to price match on your site versus Amazon. So you're shooting yourself in the foot right out of the gate by hamstringing your ability to actually drive revenue through your own website long term. So it's great. You get lots of revenue. You get it fast. It can maybe subsidize your future growth. But if that's what you're building your business on, you're going to have a really hard time surviving the next 5 or 10 years.
So why is it easier to build your business and build your brand on your own site versus Amazon?
I wouldn't say it's easier. It's definitely harder. What it is more valuable, right? So if you have maybe a lifestyle e-commerce, if you have a limited inventory and you need to liquidate it, awesome. Go sell it on Amazon. Go sell it on eBay, right? When I have extra laptops or, you know, I've got a bunch of Pokeballs from when I was a kid or something like that, right? Go ahead and sell them on eBay. It's not that big a deal. I'm not trying to build a sustainable long-term business.
You're trying to offload it and make some money, right?
Right, exactly. If I'm trying to build a long-term sustainable business, I need to own the customer. Like, the customer has to be the unit of economic value that I'm trying to acquire and nurture, like we used in the Starbucks example, which allows them to drive the massive growth that they've seen. And that's why they're going to survive the next 5 or 10 years, right? They're not just trying to sell their inventory of coffee. They're trying to acquire and retain customers who are going to continually buy coffee from them over time.
So it's funny. I actually have a neighbor, and she sells on Etsy right now. And I was talking to my wife, and I said, you know, I'm going to try to tell her, her name is Tara. I said, I'm going to try to tell Tara that she should stop selling on Etsy and sell on her own website. And my wife goes, why would she want to do that? Why would she? People are looking on Etsy for the stuff that she makes. So my question is, how can entrepreneurs offset that lost brand recognition and trust? Because obviously, if you're selling on Etsy, that site gets huge amounts of traffic. People are looking for these handcrafted jewelry, handcrafted cakes, and all different type of things. So how can you offset that lost brand recognition by selling on your own website?
So the right answer for everyone is not go launch your own website and create an inbound marketing campaign to compete against these other marketplaces. There are plenty of people for whom the right answer is sell on Etsy. You know, if she's a small business and, you know, she makes really beautiful, I bought Firefly stickers from the TV show Firefly, because all my dogs are named after Firefly characters. You know, the margin's very low on those. I think I paid $1 a sticker. You know, they probably cost her 20 cents. Maybe she's making 80 cents on the sticker. The margin's low. The decision-making process is extremely short. Her ability to upsell, cross-sell, and resell me over time is going to be very limited. If that's what she wants to do, she should stay on Etsy, right? Like, so I bought those stickers on Etsy, for example. Mm-hmm. If you want to build like a long-term business, if you're an entrepreneur who wants to build a long-term business, what you should be doing is saying, okay, like, I've acquired this customer. If I sell them these stickers, can I sell them a lot more? Can I get more value from this customer over time? And if the answer is yes, and that's what you want to do, then you need to go build your own website and your own experience. But that's not what everyone wants to do. Some people just want to make awesome Firefly stickers and sell them, and it's perfectly fine to sell that on Etsy.
I mean, so when you're talking about looking at your business model and determine, you know, what's the best approach for e-commerce platform, so how do you make sure that your inbound marketing cost doesn't exceed, you know, I think it's 6 to 30% of market fees? I mean, is that something you look at in terms of deciding if you need your own website?
So it definitely makes sense to obviously like look at acquisition costs. So the ratio, what we look at in customer-centric economics, the ratio that we look at is the cost to acquire a customer versus the amount of money I get out of them over time. So you might hear the acronym LTV to CAC. So that's the lifetime value of a customer compared to the cost of acquiring a customer, or the cost of customer acquisition, depending on where your finance guy got their MBA from. They'll use a different acronym, but it's the same thing. Inbound marketing fits into the cost of customer acquisition. So does the margin that you're paying the marketplace. Now, the difference is it might actually have a lower cost of customer acquisition, but the LTV is going to be so low, likely it's just going to be that one transaction ever, that the ratio of do I have a healthy business that can actually grow and survive over the long term is going to be off. Right? So if I spent $10 with them on stickers, that's awesome. They, you know, maybe they at 30%, right? So that's, they spent $3 on that, you know, and they probably made, you know, $2 in total net margin off of that, right? So maybe we'll say 6 to make my math easier, right? So they had a 2-to-1. So they spent $2, or they got $2 out of me, and they spent $1 to acquire me, all told, and margins and everything accepted. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Not bad. If they had other stuff that they could sell me, though, it would cost them $10 to acquire me as a customer. But if they were able to sell me $50 worth of stuff with $20 of margin, right? So that's a 1-to-3 ratio. So they put $1 into acquiring me, they get $3 out. So by understanding your business at that level, it's not necessarily about the net acquisition cost. It's about the net acquisition cost as the ratio to the value over time. This is what helps you outgrow competitors, right? So companies like Starbucks can afford to spend more money acquiring a customer than somebody like Dunkin' Donuts, for example, right? Like Dunkin' Donuts, I don't know all the details of their financials, but I don't really see people go and hang out at Dunkin' Donuts, right? Like, I had a business meeting this morning at a Starbucks. I didn't have a business meeting at a Dunkin'. It's not a great place to hang out.
Yep.
You don't spend lots and lots of money there. It lets Starbucks outgrow them, invest in new locations and new marketing and stuff, because their acquisition costs are higher, but their lifetime value, I would imagine, is much higher than Dunkin' Donuts.
So you're looking at basically what the lifetime value would be versus a customer acquisition cost.
Yep. That's the base unit of a customer-centric company.
So that's the base unit. So once you determine that, no, I'm not going to be able to make my own website to sell stickers, and you want to, you're an entrepreneur and you want to figure out a way to grow your business. So what's the next step if you realize that, hey, this product is not going to translate well into a long-term business? What should your next step be?
So again, there's nothing wrong with just being a person that's quote unquote just being a person that like makes money on Amazon or on Etsy or something like that, if that's the sort of business you want. But if you're an entrepreneur, if you want to build a growth business, if that's what's your passion, what you should do is, instead of focusing on owning a product vertical with sort of catalog depth and diversity, focus on owning a persona. So lots of lifestyle brands do this very well, right? Like Woot.com, before they were acquired by Amazon, actually did a very good job of just owning, nerd gadgets and nerd t-shirts and stuff like that. Their content was positioned for it. Their product catalog was positioned for it. They didn't have, 15 different options for foam missile launchers that you can power through your USB port on your laptop. They just had that one thing, and then they focused on, okay, somebody who's going to buy a foam missile launcher that you can power through your laptop is also going to buy maybe a fan that you can power through your laptop, sort of thing, right? So they focused on, how do I go wide instead of deep? It's a common strategic problem with startups and businesses of all kinds, is do I want to have the greatest depth of, if it's software functionality, if it's e-commerce, do I want to have the greatest depth of catalog options, or do I want to have the greatest width of catalog options that are relevant to my buyer persona? If you're looking at the LTV of a customer, your ability to upsell, cross-sell, and resell is usually going to be based on catalog width, not catalog depth.
So you're saying it's better to have catalog width in order to go forward and launching your own website versus depth?
Yep. So if I'm buying those, Firefly stickers, I'm a nerd. I like customizing stuff. What other stuff can you sell to nerds that like to customize stuff?
Like maybe like wall decals or something like that.
Wall decals could be interesting. Maybe, like a coloring book about Firefly.
Yeah.
Figure that out, right? So like you've identified my persona, my buyer persona as a customer. What else can you sell me that's not more options, more variations on Firefly stickers? I'm never going to buy that again, probably ever.
Yeah.
I just bought them to put on the dog's bowls so I knew which bowl belonged to which dog.
You could look at that and say maybe this is for dogs. So let's say we have that persona. We have the guy who's a technology marketing field, and he has dogs, and you want to own that persona. How can you test that idea to determine, how do you look at the data you have on Etsy or Amazon and say, well, here's this guy, he has dogs, he's a marketing guy in tech, he's my persona. How do I test that to make sure that that's going to be profitable for me if I launch my own store and invest money into building an inbound campaign?
Yeah, so the first problem most people have is actually figuring out, people who have already bought from them, why did they buy from them and what did they use it for? So that's the first challenge to overcome. And then you can look back, you start to identify, you start to bucket people into those personas, and then you can do your profitability analysis. Most e-commerce companies don't even ask, right? So if I buy if I buy those stickers, no one's asking me what I used them for. Nobody's sending me an email afterwards. If I'm lucky, somebody sends me an email asking if I was satisfied with the purchase. Most people don't even do that, much less ask me, like, what did you use this for? Maybe it's free text, and then you can do some keyword density stuff. Or maybe it's just a list of options that you've pre-identified. If you've got 10 different things that you know that people use this for and just have another category for the weirdos, then you can start to see. It's like, okay, what's really interesting is people who say that they bought this to customize something for their pets. That may be a little bit niche of a thing, but let's just assume that that was true. They actually tend to buy, they're 5 times more likely to buy again from me than somebody who bought this to personalize a notebook, for school or something like that, right? So now you can start to say, it's like, oh, okay, that's really interesting. So what else? So I understand I have these different cohorts. I have cohorts, meaning buckets of personas, which ones are more profitable, what do they want from me, and then I do more of the stuff that's good for the valuable personas, less of the stuff that really matters maybe to the personas that aren't so valuable.
All right, so I know we're running out of time, so I have two more quick questions to ask you. So say you're comfortable, you know, you understand, you're comfortable selling on Amazon or Etsy, you know that you have the product width you need in order to sell on your own website. How do you evaluate all the e-commerce platforms out there and decide, you know, which one to go with? And I know this is a take maybe more than a minute, but...
Yeah, it's a tough question. There's great e-commerce platforms out there. I love Shopify. I love BigCommerce. You know, there's lots of really lightweight carts that are rolling out there. In terms of differentiation, there's not a ton really between like the great competitors. You know, some of it's price, and you know that matters when you're really at scale. A weird answer that I often give is, if you're not building this website yourself, if you're working through a developer to help you implement this e-commerce shop, whatever they're comfortable with is usually the right answer. Because if you have a developer that you have a good relationship with that's going to help you with this, that's a rarer thing to accomplish than finding a shopping cart that perfectly or that fits the needs that you have when you're launching a store. So I might get an angry call from the folks at the various shopping carts after this podcast goes live. But like I would honestly focus on, you know, what's going to get you up and running the quickest, and then, you know, what for the most part has most of the functionality that you need. You need product detail pages, you need transactional email, you need some basic analytics and that sort of stuff.
So is that the first step you should take if you've been selling successfully on Amazon, you want to sell on your own site, is to evaluate the e-commerce platforms? Is that the first step, or is there something I'm missing?
No, that's your first step, right? So you want to transition that ability to sell on Amazon to your website so you can start getting some sales. And then after you have that, then you want to roll out things like a content and analytics platform. Maybe it's, you know, a blog or something to drive more traffic to your site. And then after that, after you have all of that, then you do marketing automation to accelerate the buying cycle and do the upsell, cross-sell, resell activities. You can't, you know, accelerate the buying cycle of a website where there are no customers. So you solve that problem first.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. And so everyone knows that Sam is the head of growth for HubSpot Labs, and he also has an awesome book called Inbound E-commerce. You should check that out if you're looking to, you know, build up your own brand and willing to invest the time and energy it takes to build something to worth having. So thanks a lot, Sam, for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
If you enjoy the show, please leave a review on iTunes or drop me a comment over at selfstarter.com. If you want to learn more about e-commerce, be sure to sign up for our newsletter over on our homepage. A big thanks to my friends over at Buzzsprout for hosting the show. And a huge thanks to you for listening. This podcast is for you. I'll see you on the next episode.